We all saw what happened last week. We can't let that happen. Hopefully, George is looking down right now and saying, there's a great thing that's happening for our country. There's a great day for him. It's a great day for everybody.
President Donald Trump on the May jobs report, which was much better than many predicted given the coronavirus pandemic, and invoking the name of George Floyd, the African-American man killed by white Minneapolis police officers, sparking over a week of nationwide protest. This is Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Friday, June 4th, 2020. Coming up, more from the president on the economy and the protest. Presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden talks about the jobs numbers, and we'll talk with a Wall Street Journal economic correspondent. Also, Washington, D.C. mayor leads the effort to paint Black Lives Matter on a street leading to the White House and name the intersection where peaceful protesters were cleared earlier this week after the movement. New York's governor says a video showing police in Buffalo shoving an elderly man to the ground during a protest made him sick to my stomach. And the governor of Texas talks about challenges of keeping people safe from coronavirus exposure during possible evacuations due to an approaching tropical storm. And we begin with the May jobs report. Minutes after it came out at 8:30 a.m. Eastern on Friday, President Trump was tweeting about it. In all caps, writing, these numbers are incredible, and using the words stupendous and joyous. The numbers showing 2.5 million jobs created in May and the unemployment rate falling over a percentage point to 13.3%. Still very high, but given the fallout of the coronavirus pandemic, as the Associated Press put it, it was unexpected. About 10:30 a.m. Eastern, the president was in the White House Rose Garden.
But they said 9 million job losses, 9 million. It's what going to be? Are we going to break 20%? Are we going to break it? And then the numbers came in, and one of the folks that was reading the numbers said, wow, this is a great number. It's only 3 million job losses. And then reading it and said, you know, I don't think this, I'm not reading this right. Let me look at it again. Oh, wait a minute. This is 3 million gain almost. 3 million jobs gained. And then they shouted out, one of them sort of semi-shouted out, is this a typo? I think it was probably the greatest miscalculation in the history of business shows. The history of business shows talking about Wall Street. And that's okay. But one of the reasons we're in this position is because we had such a strong foundation. So we were able to close our country, save millions of lives, open, and now the trajectory is great. Don't forget, New York is barely included, and that's one of our big ones. California is barely included because they're not open, and they should open. By the way, the mayor of Los Angeles wants to keep this thing closed for a long time. Look at what's going on in Florida. It's incredible. The job the governor of Florida has done, it's incredible. The numbers they're doing, you've got to open it up. And you do social distancing, and you wear masks if you want. And you do things, you can do a lot of things. You're getting closer together, even you. I notice you're starting to get much closer together. It looks much better, I must say. You're not all the way there yet, but you'll be there soon.
President Donald Trump in the White House Rose Garden. He had promoted this appearance with a tweet calling it a news conference, but he did not take any questions. And as Politico reports, White House staff bunched up chairs reserved for journalists at the Rose Garden speech, prompting the White House Correspondents Association to accuse the administration of endangering the health of reporters. President Trump also signing a bill into law providing more flexibility to the Paycheck Protection Program, which gives forgivable loans to small businesses to keep employees on the payroll while not working during the coronavirus pandemic. President Trump also traveling to the state of Maine today to meet with commercial fishermen and tour a medical supply company. Friday afternoon, the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden talked about the jobs report. He was in Dover, Delaware.
Today, like all Americans, I'm truly glad to see that 2.5 million Americans have gotten their jobs back. For those families, that's a sigh of relief. For all those of us, it reminds us that resilience of the American people. To those Americans, I'm so proud of you, so happy for you and for your families. I was disturbed, however, to see the president crowing this morning, basically hanging a mission accomplished banner out there. When there's so much more work to be done, so many Americans are still hurting. More than 20 million Americans, one out of every seven U.S. workers, is still out of work. For an enormous swath of our country, their dreams are still on hold, and they're still struggling to put food on the table and wondering what's going to happen tomorrow. Can I pay my rent? Will I be able to maintain my mortgage payment? The unemployment rate remains the highest it's been in nearly a century. As I said, Black employment went up this month. Latino employment jumped to over 37%. Hispanic unemployment overall is four times higher than it was before the president botched his response to the pandemic. And I'm worried when you look deeper to the data. While temporary layoffs went down, permanent layoffs went up. Donald Trump still doesn't get it. He's out there spiking the ball, completely oblivious to the tens of millions of people who are facing the greatest struggle of their lives.
Joining us now with more on the May Jobs Report is Nick Timiraos, economic correspondent with The Wall Street Journal. You have been digging into and analyzing the numbers. What do they say about the state of the economy?
Well, the headline number, of course, that the economy added 2.5 million jobs in May and that the jobless rate fell to 13.3% from 14.7% is a surprise, because if you look at the weekly unemployment claims that have been coming out, you know, 2 million, more than 2 million in the week before last, there had been the expectation across the board from economic forecasters that the unemployment rate would go up in May. It didn't. And so on the one hand, that's good news, right? On the other hand, it raises some questions over why everybody was perhaps so wrong about unemployment going up in May when, in fact, it went down.
Why do you think they were so wrong?
Part of this is it's very difficult right now to get a grip on what's happening with the reopening. You had forced lockdowns, of course, in April to limit the spread of the coronavirus. But you've also had people just choosing, even if there aren't lockdowns, not to go resume their normal activity because they don't want to get sick. The question is, how many of these people who were laid off temporarily, how many of those layoffs are going to become permanent? Because what you really don't want to see is those layoffs to become permanent. And a lot of the government's policy response in March and in April was designed to preserve those relationships. So if you look at the Paycheck Protection Program from the Small Business Administration, that really got up and running after the data was collected for the April jobs report. So you wouldn't have necessarily seen the benefit of that program in April. One possibility here is that in May, you did have some more people reemployed because their businesses were able to get those grants, which are designed to keep people employed. The other possibility is just that things got so bad in April, right? Everybody shut down in April. And so, you know, even having some reopening in May, you were going to have improvement. I think big picture here, we still have gone from an economy with a 3.5% unemployment rate in January and February to the worst unemployment rate since the BLS began the current survey in 1948, a 13.3% employment rate. It's great news that it didn't get worse, of course, after April, but it's still, if you just look at a chart of the number of people who are employed, there's a huge drop off in April, and now there's a small bounce back in May, but we still have a long way to go.
The question has been asked whether we have hit the bottom. Well, we were going down, now we went up a little bit. So are we at the bottom? Will things continue to go up?
It's entirely possible. I think part of this is going to depend on the virus. If we don't have another big wave of infections, then yeah, maybe April was the bottom. I think an equally important question, though, is if this was the bottom, the question then is going to be how quickly do we come back? Because you could see a scenario where we gain back a lot of jobs right away, but then there are also many more jobs that don't come back. If you think air travel and entertainment, you know, stadiums aren't going to be full, at least for the summer, maybe not for the rest of the year. So, you know, it's possible people talk about the shape of the recovery. Will it be a V-shaped recovery, which is a really strong rebound? Will it be more like an L, which would be a really much worse case scenario? It's possible it could be something of both, where we have a V for a little while. We come back strongly, but then we peter out well before we get back to where we were before the pandemic hit. And that, you know, if it's a really long slog from there, yeah, it'll be nice to have had that V initially, but we'll still be at a much lower level. And that, you know, that's going to raise a lot of questions around, well, what should policymakers do from there? So there's obviously a lot of uncertainty right now, even just measuring all of the people who have lost their jobs, classifying whether they, you know, if they've temporarily been laid off, why aren't they going to work? This is difficult. We've never done anything like this before. And so there's just a lot of uncertainty right now.
Nick Timiraos, economic correspondent with The Wall Street Journal. Find his stories at WSJ.com. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
On Wall Street today, the Dow is up 829, NASDAQ up 198, S&P up 81. The White House is fortified with a new layer of fencing ahead of a second weekend of expected protests in Washington, D.C., and indeed across the country, following the killing of African-American man George Floyd by white Minneapolis police officers. During the president's remarks in the White House Rose Garden about the economy, he talked about the protests and the federal response.
We have fantastic military. We have fantastic National Guard. National Guard was barely used. And these people have done an unbelievable job. They helped the Secret Service at Washington. Secret Service, by the way, are unbelievable. The job they did at the White House is unbelievable. There was never any form of like, oh, gee, this sounds dangerous. All I could see is what I was seeing on television. But they were outside, and the Secret Service was incredible. But we were also helped by the D.C. police, and we were helped by the National Guard. It was unbelievable. They came in, and this was like a piece of cake. And I really am suggesting, because if you look at Minnesota and the great success we had there and other places, I'm suggesting to some of these governors that are too proud in New York, I mean, you see what's going on there, don't be proud. Get the job done. You'll end up looking much better in the end. Call in the National Guard, call me. We'll have so many people, more people than you have to dominate the streets. You can't let what's happening happen. It's called dominate the streets. You can't let that happen in New York, where they're breaking into stores and all of the things. And by the way, hurting many small businesses. You can't let it happen. Equal justice under the law must mean that every American receives equal treatment in every encounter with law enforcement, regardless of race, color, gender, or creed. They have to receive fair treatment from law enforcement. They have to receive it. We all saw what happened last week. We can't let that happen. Hopefully, George is looking down right now and saying, there's a great thing that's happening for our country. There's a great day for him. It's a great day for everybody. This is a great day for everybody. This is a great, great day in terms of equality. It's really what our Constitution requires, and it's what our country is all about.
President Donald Trump in the White House Rose Garden. Again, the event mainly on the jobs report. The president has canceled an expected trip to his golf resort in Bedminster, New Jersey this weekend amid the ongoing nationwide protests. The mayor of St. Paul, Minnesota, Melvin Carter, later responding to the president's comments about the economy, the protests, and George Floyd.
And I'll tell you, if there's one thing that really shows and illustrates really strongly the fact that we have a long way to go spiritually as a country to figure out how to see ourselves through to the other side, it's the president's comments today to suggest, based on a monthly jobs report, that today is a good day, that today will be a good day for George Floyd, despite the fact that he has been killed by law enforcement, despite the fact that we have a president who has refused to acknowledge that there's even a problem, despite the fact that, you know, one in three in Minnesota, one in three African-Americans has filed for unemployment insurance. We've seen this healthcare pandemic impact African-Americans most, who, you know, account for 13% of the U.S. population, but over 20% of as far as COVID-19 deaths. As we've seen all of these things play out over and over and over again, it is very clear that, you know, while 43 million Americans have filed for unemployment insurance in the past few months, and billionaires have increased their wealth by over $500 billion, that the paper economy that the president is celebrating today would unfortunately most likely not be helping George Floyd today.
Mayor of St. Paul, Minnesota, Melvin Carter, during a virtual forum hosted by Axios. The Minnesota Department of Human Rights and the city of Minneapolis, where George Floyd was killed, have now agreed to ban the use of chokeholds by police and requiring officers to report and intervene when their colleagues use excessive force. Applause in Washington, D.C. at 16th and 8th H Streets Northwest, right near the White House, as a city employee installs a sign reading Black Lives Matter Plaza and covering the entire street itself for two blocks, contracted by the city. Large yellow letters spelling out Black Lives Matter. Chief of Staff to Mayor Muriel Bowser tweeting, there was a dispute this week about whose street this is. Mayor Bowser wanted to make it abundantly clear that this is D.C. Street and to honor demonstrators who peacefully protest on Monday evening. The mayor addressed the crowd at the unveiling.
I want to welcome all peaceful protesters to Washington, D.C. Members of the Council of Washington, D.C., and we want to call attention today to making sure our nation is more fair and more just, and that Black lives and Black humanity matter in our nation. We're here peacefully as Americans on American streets, on DC streets. We're here, people of all backgrounds and beliefs from all eight wards of Washington, DC, to exercise our First Amendment rights. So as Washingtonians, we simply all want to be here together in peace to demonstrate that in America, you can peacefully assemble. You can bring grievances to your government, and you can demand change.
Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser. The mayor sent a letter to President Trump today asking him to withdraw thousands of federal law enforcement officers and troops that were called to the city to deal with potentially violent protests. The president tweeting today, the incompetent mayor of Washington, whose budget is totally out of control and is constantly coming back to us for handouts, is now fighting with the National Guard, who saved her from great embarrassment over the last number of nights. If she doesn't treat these men and women well, then we'll bring in a different group of men and women. That tweet from President Trump. And today, the Army Secretary Ryan McCarthy says Defense Secretary Mark Esper has ordered the remaining active duty soldiers who had been on standby in the D.C. area back to their home bases after several days of peaceful protest in the nation's capital. Retired General Martin Dempsey, former chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the latest former military commander to condemn President Trump's threat to use military force to suppress the protests. Martin Dempsey spoke to National Public Radio Thursday night.
There was a couple of things that came on rather quickly. One of them was the description of the challenge, let's say, with these protests of dominating the battle space. And that's a characteristic that we use for conflict and external wars. And I thought, you know, that's not something the American people should think about in terms of when they see members of the military on their streets. And secondly, you know, the idea that the military would be called in to dominate and to suppress what, for the most part, were peaceful protests, admittedly, where some had opportunistically turned them violent, and that the military would somehow come in and calm that situation was very dangerous to me. By the way, I should mention, there's no question that the law would allow the use of the military in extremis, in an extreme situation when state governments were either unable to even convene or that when state and local law enforcement were overwhelmed. But none of that seemed to be the case. And so the idea that the president would overwhelm the situation, would take charge of the situation using the military, was troubling to me. I should mention at this point that this idea that we have to maintain a relationship of trust between the American people and its military is important because that's who we are. But also pragmatically, we have an all-volunteer force, and we ask parents across the country to share their sons and daughters with us for a period of military service. And were we to lose the trust and confidence of the American people, it would make sustaining that all-volunteer force more than difficult.
Retired General Martin Dempsey, former chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, part of an interview with NPR. A U.S. House aide tells the Hill newspaper that Defense Secretary Mark Esper and the current Joint Chiefs of Staff Chair General Mark Milley have refused to testify before the House Armed Services Committee about the military's role in responding to the nationwide protests. This is Washington Today. In Buffalo, New York, prosecutors are investigating after a video captured police officers shoving a 75-year-old man during a protest. The man fell and hit his head, laying there bleeding. He's reportedly hospitalized in serious but stable condition. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo asked a comment during his news conference in Albany.
Governor, on Buffalo, do you think the officers involved in that incident should be fired by the city? And as a follow-up, when you first saw that video, what was your reaction?
I was sick to my stomach. Sick to my stomach. It was the same feeling I've had for 90 of the past nights when I would get the death total from coronavirus. I would physically get sick to my stomach. And when I saw the video, I got sick to my stomach. Not to be overly graphic, but that is the answer to your question. I think Mayor Brown was 100% right in suspending the police officers last night. I think he acted quickly and appropriately, and I applaud that. The firing is then a contractual collective bargaining question, right? How do you go from suspension to firing by that contract and the process? But I would say I think the city should pursue firing. And I think the district attorney should look at the situation for possible criminal charges. And I think that should be done on an expeditious basis. We saw in Minneapolis that people want answers and they want accountability and they want it quickly. You know, the wheels of justice move slowly. Yet they don't have to. They can move fast. You can turn the crank faster. And I would encourage the district attorney not to do what happened in Minneapolis, which was the delay itself caused issues. Remember, the district attorney came out and said initially, well, there's other evidence that suggests something else. You know, people don't want vagary. People are upset. They're angry. They're frustrated. Give me an answer. Give me an answer quickly. Explain it to me. If there's something you know that I don't know, tell me what you know. I'm tired of secrets by government. So I would encourage the district attorney to move quickly and fairly, but quickly. And I think the mayor should, the police chief, should pursue firing and go through whatever process they have to go through. But again, look, the mayor suspended those two cops very quickly, and I respect that.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. A Buffalo police spokesman confirms the department's entire emergency response team has resigned in a protest of their own. It is apparently a voluntary assignment, so the 50-plus officers remain part of the Buffalo Police Department. Los Angeles Times writes, Governor Gavin Newsom met with Stockton Mayor Michael Tubbs and Central Valley City's black community leaders on Thursday, continuing a listening tour in cities across the state as more Californians demand action and accountability for police brutality. Today, Governor Newsom was back in the capital city, Sacramento, for a news conference about those protests.
One thing that is crystal clear to me, having seen images that inspired me of peaceful protests, that protesters have the right not to be harassed. Protesters have the right to protest peacefully. Protesters have the right to do so without being arrested, gassed, be shot at by projectiles. That's a simple value statement. I want to make that crystal clear. They have the right not to be harassed, not to be denied, not to be arrested for peaceful protesting. Period. Full stop. But it's clear on the images we see on TV, on the reality of a grandmother in La Mesa, California, that's in the hospital, that some people are denied that fundamental right. And then we're not seeing people treated equally all across the state of California. Now, we have rules and regulations, the California Highway Patrol, as it relates to how we use projectiles and how we use tear gas and how we use force to protect the peace. Not deadly force in this case, but broadly. National Guard has a frame. But municipalities have different approaches. And it's clear to me that we need to standardize those approaches.
California Governor Gavin Newsom. One specific police tactic that he's calling for ending is known as carotid restraint, which involves an officer wrapping his or her arms around a person's head and applying pressure. The governor is saying that it should be removed from the training manual, and he would support legislation to ban it statewide. Tropical storm and storm surge watches have been issued for portions of the northern Gulf Coast ahead of tropical storm Cristobal. In Texas, Governor Greg Abbott cautioning that people will need to be more prepared than ever to evacuate if needed because of the coronavirus. Governor Abbott speaking from the Alternate State Operations Center in Austin.
And so I want to emphasize that we have strategies in place already in the event that it's needed to ensure that those in nursing homes in the affected area will be able to be moved very safely. And what I mean safely, obviously, in the usual safe standards, but also safely as in COVID-19 safe. To make sure that we're able to separate those who test positive and negative for COVID-19 and keep them separated, doing all we can to prevent any other type of spread and also to protect the health and safety of everyone who may currently have COVID-19. And so that applies particularly with senior centers that Health and Human Services Commission is working on, but it also applies generally in the response to this particular tropical storm event. So as local officials go about their task of responding to this tropical storm challenge, they need to be cognizant constantly about the possibility that this could stoke people coming together in ways it could transmit COVID-19. As a result, one thing that we're asking, that is, as local officials go about the process of evacuation, if evacuation is needed, they adopt strategies here that are different than what their typical strategies may be. They utilize vehicles that will be far more numerous in number so that there can be greater spacing than is typically used, that they consider using for locations to evacuate people to, not convention center type settings like what they may have used in the past where you would have a lot of people congregating together, but instead consider the availability of hotels or motels or other settings where family units would be able to be in a room by themselves without exposing themselves to others, using those types of strategies that will always keep in mind the ongoing need to deal with the ongoing existence of COVID-19 in the state of Texas, and understanding that as we respond to this tropical storm, we must respond in ways that continue to contain the spread of COVID-19.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott. The tropical storm Cristobal is expected to make landfall over the weekend in East Texas, with heavy rain, wind, and potential flooding as far as Dallas. A second landfall expected this weekend in Louisiana. The World Health Organization is now recommending that governments ask everyone to wear fabric face masks in public areas where there's a risk of transmission of COVID-19 to help reduce the spread of the disease. Here is the WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus in Geneva.
Today, WHO is publishing updated guidance on the use of masks for control of COVID-19. This guidance is based on evolving evidence and provides updated advice on who should wear a mask, when it should be worn, and what it should be made of. WHO has developed this guidance through a careful review of all available evidence and extensive consultation with international experts and civil society groups. I wish to be very clear that the guidance we are publishing today is an update of what we have been saying for months, that masks should only ever be used as part of a comprehensive strategy in the fight against COVID. Masks on their own will not protect you from COVID-19.
WHO Director General Dr. Tedros. While some countries and U.S. states have recommended or mandated the wearing of face coverings in public, the WHO had previously said there was not enough evidence for or against the use of masks for healthy people in the wider community. And as we end this week, according to the Johns Hopkins Coronavirus Resource Center, global deaths from the pandemic near 393,000. And in the U.S., the death toll is almost 109,000. This has been Washington Today. Thanks for being with us. Download the free C-SPAN Radio app to take C-SPAN Radio with you anywhere and get our podcasts. Podcasts also available online at cspan.org/podcasts. Have a good night and weekend, and as always, stay safe.